This podcast replay is brought to you by Caneswear.com. For all your Canes, Dolphins, and Heat needs, visit them at 2511 South University Drive in Davie. Free shipping with online orders over $99. Go to Caneswear.com at Miami Fanwear. That's the spot where South Florida fans shop.
Promised you we're going to talk a little football, and last night there wasn't any being played at Drive Pink Stadium. If you were looking for football, you weren't going to find it there, because Inter Miami got absolutely dogged by New England 5-0. And my man Franco Panizo, of course, follow him on Twitter. You see his Twitter handle right there at Franco Panizo. Check out Miami Total Football. He does an exceptional job of covering this team on an unbiased level, which is a beautiful thing and something that I appreciate. Franco, good afternoon, sir. How are you doing, my man?
I'm good, bro. I'm good. A little tired. I was up late last night. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you perfectly. Okay.
Just making sure. No, I'm just a little tired. Was at the stadium till late. We watched the game as I always do. You know, there's a lot of concerning images live, and then on the second viewing as well, which I'm sure we'll get into some of that here. So I'm a bit tired, but overall, I'm good. Inter Miami, not so much.
No, and you know, Franco, one of the easy targets is Phil Neville, right? But how much do we give him a pass that this is just a terrible team, dude? We have to just come to grips. We got to get off this whole salary trip and how much they're spending. There's no chemistry here. This team doesn't work. That one play where Higuain is running down the middle of the pitch, and he passes it to the left, and Pizarro is nowhere to be found. He's thinking of Acapulco and relaxing and whatever, and he's like standing there. That was the defining moment of the season, and it describes what this team has been in the front office and on the pitch. It's so disconnected and discombobulated. What freaking coach can win with this group, dude? Please explain that one to me.
Look, so I agree with you. I think I said in the press box and on that very moment, in that very play, that you know, that's the defining image of Inter Miami right now. Just not on the same page. You know, just not on the same wavelength. It's not pretty. It's not pretty. You know, and it happens over the course of a game where maybe a player doesn't read the play or doesn't like expect a run or a pass from a teammate. That happens. But this has happened too and far between. Or it has happened way too often throughout the course of these two seasons. Yeah. Look, as for whether it's just the team or it's Phil Neville, I think it's a combination of both, because this team has regressed from where it was last year. It's not only getting beaten with poor performances, it's getting beaten badly on the scoreline. You look at individual performances, and even Lewis Morgan.
LGP should be turning in his check. He should go to Jorge Mas and say, "Here, bro, I am absolute dog shit," because he is terrible, bro. Terrible.
I'm not that low on LGP. I think, again, the whole team is not playing.
But I see a lot of mistakes by LGP around the box, bro.
Yesterday for me, LGP wasn't one of the main culprits. Nico Estigal had probably the worst game for Inter Miami that he's ever had.
He was bad.
He was involved in at least three of the goals, showed a lack of effort and apathy in terms of defending and getting back sometimes. Lewis Morgan did as well.
No awareness. There was no awareness, bro.
I don't think it's awareness. I think it's just the team is in such a bad way that players are not buying into the game plan, low on confidence, thinking they're going to resolve themselves in situations where they have to rely on the team, or vice versa, trying to rely on the team or defer to the team when it's them that has to put out fires. It's not good. It's not good across the board. And again, just going back to individual performances, Lewis Morgan was the standout player last year for Inter Miami. This year has looked a shell of himself, a shadow of himself. I think he has one goal and one assist.
Is that his fault, or is that
right? That's my point to coaching.
That's Neville, right? Yeah, that's Neville, because you know, every time I see him try to break down a defender, I'm like, dude, that's not who you are, bro. And they take the ball away from him every single time. He's not that guy, and he's trying to use him more into the middle of the field instead of keeping on the outside and letting him set people up. that's what they should be doing, and they don't do that. That's where I do blame Neville. Yes.
Yeah. Right. I, again, from a performance standpoint, who has gotten better this year? Who has played better this year?
Zero.
And the best player is probably this year, probably for me, is Greg Oddi, the Brazilian center midfielder who didn't play yesterday. And even he has missed two games, one because of a red card, another because of yellow card accumulation. So your best player has missed two games because of disciplinary reasons on the field. So, same you know, that
LGP has those issues too for 2 years now.
No, sure. But I'm just saying, if that's your best player, and I think Greg Oddi has been good, but if that's your best player, that just shows that your team is not in a good way. Your attackers aren't doing enough consistently, and just hasn't been good enough across the board. There's a lot of issues here. Players, coaching. Are there cultural differences that we can't put a pulse on, or we can't really? It's not something tangible, but something that could be happening in that locker room. Because I'm of the belief that some players either have given up on Phil Neville or don't buy into what he's selling, or never really did. We're seeing that.
Like any sport, my brother, I've done this for a long, long time. The second the players don't buy into what the coach is selling because it's not getting results, pluck, they tune you completely out. And that's in any sport. It doesn't matter. It's not a football thing. It's not an NFL thing. It's not a Major League Baseball thing. Once they know you don't know what the hell you're doing, and now we're talking about six straight losses now, which, by the way, that never happened last year, right?
Right. You know five, I mean? Last year. Five. They got to five. So last night they broke the record for losing streak, and they did so in record fashion because they've never lost by this much. 5-0 is the biggest defeat the Inter Miami's had in a short history.
I tweeted out yesterday, dude, the Miami Fusion was never this bad. Never this bad. And they were mediocre, you know, with Digital Takawita and everything the first year. I was a stadium announcer. I was there for every moment of the Fusion in their existence. They were still better on their worst days. Forget about the Ray Hudson years. That's not – I don't even want to talk about those 2 years. That's not even – this football is not even close to what Ray Hudson and his company were doing. That's – in fact, dude, let me tell you something. Did you hear the broadcast?
I did on the second watch. Obviously, the first watch I was in the stadium, but the second watch, I listened to it.
At the end of that first half, I was actually going to play it for folks. I mean, Ray Hudson, like, lit him up. And then by the end, I'm telling you something. By the end of this season, that man may quit from calling these games because he knows what's coming up, because next year there's going to be a lot of the same, because they can't really get rid of a lot of these guys. They're kind of stuck with him. You know what? I don't know how much you follow the Heat, but the Whiteside years with the Johnson brothers and all that they were stuck to those contracts, that's what this team reminds me of. It reminds me of that Heat team that is stuck with a bunch of contracts in a bad cap situation, and they stayed there and they were mediocre. Mediocre for the Heat is hovering around 500 and maybe, you know, just get in the playoffs or something. That's mediocre for the Heat. But for this team, mediocre is a lot worse. You're the worst team in the league. But it kind of reminds me of that situation, that they're stuck in a position right now financially that I don't know how the hell they get out of it.
Yeah, look, they have – issues coming up in the next few seasons that they're going to have to resolve with the sanctions. They're probably going to have to get rid of some of these players and rely on even younger players that are on less money, that are less proven. So, but that's further down the line. If we're talking this season right now, I mean, they need to have real hard talks, real hard discussions. I've heard David Beckham is coming within the next few days. That was already in the plans, but this is not because of the result last night. But when he gets here, he needs to sit down with Jorge and Jose Mas. They need to have hard talks. They need to have a real discussion with Phil Neville and try to figure out how to best move forward. Because right now, this team is a disaster. Last night was some of the worst soccer I've seen professionally in 10-plus years, live and in person. It was awful. Like, just players not on the same page. After the first 15 minutes, because we have to take into account the first 15 minutes, Inter Miami looked pretty good.
Well.
They were on the front foot. They were attacking. They looked the team that was more likely to score. But then once that New England
the Robbie
goal came,
strike was nice. The Robbie strike was nice. I know I went just wide right, but it was like, okay, this is the guy that we were hoping for, you know? And then after that, that was like the highlight of the night, actually.
That's not true.
They hit the post twice. They hit the post twice.
Once New England scored, though, the wheels just came off. Everything just went to the crapper. Because it just players crumbled, heads went down, And yeah. you could just see it from there. The desire was no longer there. Look, Phil Neville after the game, I don't know if this is just the point where he's recognized it, or I doubt that's the case, or but it's the point where he's finally said enough is enough. I have to acknowledge this publicly. And last night he said he's practically, at least from my vantage point, my viewpoint, practically pleading for this group of players to be a team. Because he was saying, look, we need a team. All I'm asking for is a team. You can win, you can lose, but you know this football club needs to have a team that fights for each other. So, look, I've been talking about that for months now. I can remember the exact moment I first had this impression or this perspective on Inter Miami this season, and it was the Wednesday night game that was with the monsoon, with the rain delay. I know that because it ended up being my birthday at midnight that night. And I remember writing the next day and saying it on Miami Total Football's YouTube page, this is a collection of individuals. They don't play for one another. They don't fight for one another. Victor Ulloa had a very illuminating quote during the pregame press conference on Tuesday this week, talking about how they haven't been able to establish those bonds in the locker room because of COVID, and how they were, you know, they had to come just to go to training sessions. They would train together for an hour and a half, and then they would all go their own way. They didn't have time in the locker room, et cetera, et cetera. But look, we've heard this since last year.
Everybody has the same issues.
Exactly.
Nashville had to go through the same. Give me a break.
Exactly. And we've heard this before. AJ De La Garza.
As we say in Spanish, eso es una paja mental. Okay? Let it go. All right? Go ahead.
No. Look, AJ De La Garza said it last year.
And by the way, for our Anglo friends out there, mental masturbation is that. That's what that is. So go ahead.
Last year, AJ De La Garza said it after the playoff game. After the loss, the 3-0 loss to Nashville SC, he said, we're not on the same page. I asked Will Trapp after he left Inter Miami to go to Minnesota United.
I remember that.
Why he thought that the team did not succeed or live up anywhere close to expectations last year. He said, it's a collection of individuals. Now you're getting Victor Ulloa saying the chemistry is still not there, that they're still working on it. They finally have been able to spend some time together over the last 2 weeks. Look, if that's such a recurring issue, then this team is a broken team. And I said that last night in my video that'll come out today. I will write that today. This is a broken, fractured team that I don't know what the solutions are. I think if Phil Neville stays on board,
there's no solution here, not for this season.
No. I mean, I've been saying for weeks now that everything's trending down. I don't see much reason for optimism. But in terms of what they can do going forward, this group, if Phil Neville stays on board, look. It's probably time to bench Blaise Matuidi. I think that will happen on Sunday. I think pulling him at halftime yesterday was a big sign that that Phil Neville is considering that move. Because I liked what I saw from Jay Chapman in the second half as well. I think Gonzalo Higuain could be benched on a more permanent basis. Not this, oh, well, he's on a fitness plan type of thing. Because, look, you can lose games, but it's better to lose 2-1 to Orlando City or 1-0 DC United with some crap soccer. But at least there's effort, as opposed to losing 5-0 like we saw last night. Because that was abysmal. And again, the fans deserve way better than that.
Miami Total Football is the podcast that you must listen to if you're an Inter Miami fan and you want to.
I got the shirt on.
That's right. He's got the shirt on. That's right. And follow him on Twitter because you'll get all the updates. Subscribe so you can get the little bell that tells you that the notification that the latest podcast is out. Now, you said something interesting. Beckham's coming back, and they've got to have a conversation. How much is Beckham the problem? Because he brought Phil Neville. Matuidi is his guy, his friend, that he helped lure here. And so if those are two of the moves tied to specifically Bex, those have been absolutely terrible moves so far. Again, I started this by saying you can't blame Neville, but I'm going to say right now, at least you can't be impressed by Neville. And Matuidi, I mean, seriously, what moron adds a defensive midfielder as a DP? I mean, you know, that I tweeted that out yesterday. Only Paul McDonough would build a team with no attacking midfielder. And this is the nuttiest thing about it. At least with the fusion, we had 87-year-old El Pibe. But at least El Pibe at 87 years old can place the ball in places that nobody could pretty much in that league. And he moved slightly faster than the Statue of Liberty. I mean, slightly faster than the Statue of Liberty. Yet, it didn't matter who it was, whether it was Roy Lassiter, you name it, they are going to have the ball placed right on their foot ahead of the defender so you can get into the box and make your play. And that's how do you not build a team with an offensive-minded midfielder, bro? Please explain that to me.
I mean, they thought Pizarro was the guy, and that was someone that Diego Alonso wanted on board that he had worked with previously at two different clubs in Mexico. So Pizarro was supposed to be that number 10. And look, early on, he carried his weight early on. Then after the MLS's back tournament, his performances started to dip a little bit. I think the arrival of Gonzalo Higuain also impacted his influence in the team and in the locker room. So I think there's a lot of things. I think there's a lot of things with regards to why this team is in a bad way. You mentioned David Beckham. Look, David Beckham is a very successful person. His brand is attached to winning brands, successful brands. This is partially his team though. And he has had a say in a lot of the decisions that have not gone well. And there's call a spade. That's just the reality of the situation. He, along with Jorge Mas, decided to hire Paul McDonough initially over Chris Henderson. They were both finalists for the sporting director job, and they went with Paul McDonough. That was the wrong choice. They tried to right that wrong this year by firing Paul McDonough and hiring Chris Henderson. But the damage has already been done. And now David Beckham handpicks Phil Neville, who is his former teammate, a friend, and a business partner. And Phil Neville is not doing a good enough job. We can talk about the team. The players aren't doing a good enough job. Sure. But the head coach is also not doing a good enough job. They're not scoring off of set pieces. They're not scoring at all. And they're losing games in ugly and lopsided fashion. So, again, there's problems across the board for Inter Miami, but Phil Neville is definitely one of them. David Beckham's decision-making might also be part of the equation.
Yeah, and so the follow-up that I have to ask you with David Beckham, with Chris Henderson, with Jorge Mas involved, what was the determination? Have you been able to find out behind the scenes why they went with McDonough over Henderson? Did Henderson demand more control? And since Henderson has taken over, does he have full control? Or can he get influenced by either Beckham or Moss, and that because they want something, Henderson, you know, this happens a lot in other sports. I don't follow the intricacies of the MLS as much, but I know if I'm Chris Henderson, I'm leaving Seattle and I'm going to Miami, I'm going to tell them, hey, yo guys, I make the final call on personnel moves here. Not anybody else. I understand you guys are the owners, but if I'm going to run the team, I want control. See, because I'm not convinced that Paul McDonough made every decision. As you mentioned, the coach had influence on Pizarro and stuff. So it gets to a point where if you're the GM and you're going to get blamed for everything like McDonough, did McDonough do all the decisions? Apparently not. Is Chris Henderson making all the decisions? Because if he isn't making all the decisions, well, then I know where Chris Henderson's going to end up. He's going to end up fired eventually. Because if other people are making the decisions, the GM always gets the blame in the end. And so how much control does Chris Henderson truly have? Because here's where I end my point. Chris Henderson has more experience and is more proven at building soccer teams than David Beckham, Jorge Mas, and everybody else in that franchise combined. He is better than they are at all of this. So why not allow him to have total control of personnel decisions?
So that's a good question. That's a question that I raised when Chris Henderson initially took the job, because remember, he was hired simultaneously with Phil Neville. That was like a joint announcement that they made. They both had a joint press conference. So I have questions, and I don't have answers for you. Unfortunately, I don't have concrete answers for you, but I have questions as to how much authority Chris Henderson has in this team, because I don't think if he did a coaching search, if you gave Chris Henderson the start of the year an open slate and you said, go find a head coach, I don't think he would have found or picked or come up to the conclusion that Phil Neville's the guy. That's a David Beckham.
Dude, you and I know he would have picked an MLS guy. He would have found the best assistant coach out there, or he would have stolen somebody else's coach from them. That's what he would have done. Come on, bro.
So it's David Beckham's guy. Phil Neville is David Beckham's handpicked guy. Now, does Chris Henderson have the authority to say, hey, David, hey, Jorge, I think it's time we let Phil go? Does he have that power, or is David, because he's involved, because it's his, it's someone he's close to, he has ties with, we're talking about Phil, is he going to say, sure, yeah. So I have a question with regards to how much authority Chris Henderson has, something I raised when he was first hired, because this situation obviously was hypothetical in that instance, but I said, you know, what if Phil Neville doesn't do a good job? Does Chris Henderson have the green light to just say, look, let's cut our ties and start over? Because it's not a Chris Henderson hire. So I think with how involved David Beckham and Jorge Mas are, I don't think it's necessarily entirely a bad thing, but I think they also need to let the soccer people that are the decision that have experience, that have the sporting director or the front office
title
experience, mm-hmm. let them make the decisions. You can have your input, you can have your desires for what you want, and let them execute that plan. But I think, you know, you don't want to be overbearing or too much involved also, because that can also lead to negative things. And you mentioned Paul McDonough, and I'll close out with this with regards to this topic. Last year at one point, Paul McDonough, during the beginning of the season, before the pandemic hit, he was talking about signing a number 9 and a central midfielder. And he wasn't looking at bigger names. He was looking at players that were a little bit younger, that aren't as flashy, good players, but not with the caliber or the careers of Gonzalo Higuain and Blaise Matuidi. Some point after Inter Miami started resuming training in June, that changed. And now it was, we need some stars. They started, you know, there was reports of Willian and Luis Suarez, Edison Cavani. It changed. I don't think, and again, this is just what I think, I don't think Paul McDonough changed his approach or his mindset for how he wanted to build a team. I think that was instructed to him. Like, hey, look, we need a competitive team. We need players that are going to come in and make an impact, but we also need some big names because we have this, this, and this. Whatever those things are. Whether it's marketing off the field.
Just look at his work in Atlanta, and it tells you that it's not the same.
Sure. It's not his formula. Right. So I think ownership probably was saying, hey, look, I don't know. Again, I don't know what the reasons were. I can surmise or speculate, you know, maybe financially, with the impact that COVID had on teams. Maybe Inter Miami is like, we need to recover some of this by investing in bigger name players that are going to draw us more attention and sell jerseys, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, we don't have concrete answers as to that. But along the way, Paul McDonough's mindset or approach changed. I imagine that came from his bosses, which are the owners. So, there's a lot to chew on with this team. It's not just about the players and the coaches. Again, across the board, there needs to be some real honest reflection and assessment of what's going on.
And they better reflect soon, because they're losing beat writers. San Sentin already pulled a beat writer. So now you only have one paper that has a beat writer involved, and you. That's it. It's you two, and that's it. They lost Kobe. Kobe, they moved him to the University of Miami, and they didn't replace Kobe with somebody else now. And then the other thing last night, the stands. They were as empty as you've seen, and you know South Florida. I know South Florida very well. It's going to get hotter now over the next couple of months. You will see less and less people show up to games, because you and I know, dude, you got to entertain. You got to win. You don't have to win a title in this town, but you have to prove to people that you can actually try to compete and entertain. And unfortunately, they're not competitive. They don't entertain. I tweeted out last night, they're more frustrating to watch than the crypto market the last 3 months. I mean, you know, that's how bad it's been watching Inter Miami right now. So that's the other thing, dude, that they're stepping into the apathy zone. And that's where the Marlins have been stuck in that purgatory for years. And it's not because the Marlins haven't tried to compete in forever. So that's a whole different ballgame. I know George wants to compete, but unfortunately they're making all the right decisions. But unfortunately, on the flip side, they're losing the PR battle in a big time way. And last night in the stands, it was clear, dude. I mean, it was empty.
Well, look, so midweek MLS games across the board are notoriously difficult, or they draw a lot less just because it's tougher for fans or people in general. Public that's interested in soccer.
The last weekend game.
For sure. Yeah. Listen, there's also I've covered MLS for a long time. I've seen a lot of expansion teams. There's initially a big excitement, a big wave. It's something new, something exciting in town, the shiny new toy. So people go into it. You need to win to keep as much of those people still engaged going forward after year two, year three. Because if you don't, well, naturally there's going to be people who are like, all right, well, I already saw it. Okay, I don't need to buy season tickets anymore. Or, all right, well, I'll just go to a game here every now and then. And people just become a little bit indifferent just in general. Now, if you lose on top of that, then you're really going to hurt yourself. You saw people booing. You saw people heading for the exit doors early. Yet it's not the first time we've seen that this season. They need to figure it out. And look, again, there's a lot we can chew on, a lot we can dissect. I can imagine Jorge Mas and Jose Mas sitting there in the stadium, seeing what's happening around them. You know, that they probably want answers of what's going on, and they probably want to make decisions. But again, David Beckham is also involved. Phil Neville's David Beckham's guy. Can they just say, hey, we want to get rid of Phil? Is he going to sign off on that? I mean, probably not. Again, we don't know if they want to get rid of Phil, but if they did want to, is it just as easy as them making that call, or is it a longer or bigger talk with David Beckham? So the state of the team's not good. You know, there's more questions than answers, not only about the present, but the future and the direction of this franchise. So,
by the way, how about a couple of co-owners saying we want out, we're done?
Yeah, that's what's reportedly happening behind the scenes. Not entirely surprised by that, because we haven't seen Marcelo Claudio in a long time. So,
yeah. And so what do you hear? What is it? Was he unhappy with something? Did he want to give some input? What's the, because it's not just him, it's the other gentleman too that's also wanting out. So I think there was a deal where Moss would buy both of them out, which is a lot more money that he's got to spend. I mean, the man's had to pay for that stadium. He's overpaid for this payroll, which, I mean, is crazy. What is this, the third highest paid team or first highest paid team in the league?
It's the team with the biggest salary in MLS. According to the report from The Athletic, there's been a difference of opinion, not seeing eye to eye, Jorge Mas and Marcelo Claure. I haven't heard details as to what's happened there, but again, if you look at the bigger picture, or you take a step back and look at everything that's happened, Marcelo Claure was the guy that was David Beckham's right-hand man initially, going to Miami Heat games together as far back as 2014 during the Big Three era. You know, you can see pictures of Claure and Beckham at American Airlines Arena, or what was formerly known as American Airlines Arena, and LeBron coming over to shake David's hand. And they were in it together. But along the way, they needed more local ownership with more ties locally, as well as maybe more financial backbone. And that's where Jorge Mas came into play. And obviously, if you're footing a lot of the bill, you're going to have a big say in what you want out of the team and what's going on. So maybe Jorge Mas saw the team in a different light than Marcelo did, and they just didn't agree. And Marcelo has obviously taken a step back because he's not the biggest investor. So I think it's probably along the lines of something like that. But again, I don't know all the details.
I talked about this 2 weeks ago on the show. I think what's happening with Jorge Mas, unfortunately, is the same thing that happened to Steven Ross. It's the same thing that happened to Vinny Viola and Doug Cifu with the Panthers. They all took over something new that they didn't know about, and those two other guys made a ton of mistakes. The Panthers finally fired Dale Tallon after several years, and they brought in a new GM that obviously really changed the culture and the team, and they had a lot of success this year. Steven Ross, I mean, kept Parcells around, extended Philbin, and he did all kinds of stupid shit. And then finally, he hired Chris Greer instead of all these other clowns that he had in the past, and now things are turning around. I think those two owners have figured things out. I think Moss is a new owner and a new owner of a new business. When you get into a new business, you make all kinds of mistakes, unfortunately. And right now, Moss is making his share of mistakes. I still think in the end, he'll figure it out and he'll win because he's so damn determined. But unfortunately, he's going through the same thing some of our prior owners here that we currently have. And it's kind of normal, man. When it's guys that have never done this before, or anybody that opens up a new business, you're going to make all kinds of mistakes. And I think that's what's happening right now with Mas.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, he's still fairly new to the sport. as well as the business, this side, you know, this owning a sports team. So, you know, he's a successful businessman, has a lot of money, but in terms of soccer and running a team and running in a soccer business, very new to all that. I'm sure he's learning a lot, or has learned a lot over the last year and a half plus. So there's growing pains there. But again, like I'll reiterate what I've said before, there need to be some hard looks in the mirror and some hard discussions across the board for this team to right its wrongs and at least get the ship back on track, because right now it's a sinking ship. Obviously we focus, or I focus more on the field, the X's and O's and the 90 minutes there, but it all matters. It all influences what happens there in front of our eyes. So everything across the board, from ownership to coaching to players, everything needs to be looked at in terms of, are we doing the right things here? Are we making the right decisions?
The only thing I would correct you on for this season, it's a sunken ship. It ain't sinking. It's sunk already. It is pretty much done. When is the next Miami Total Football podcast? Tell the folks out there.
So I'm trying to pin down those details now, because Inter Miami again plays on Sunday. So we want to get something up before Sunday to reflect on Wednesday night in detail, as well as preview what's to come. We're trying to figure out if it's going to be recorded tonight or tomorrow. Probably going to try to do it tonight so it can be out for the weekend, so that people can have something to listen to on Friday, because I know once Friday night hits in South Florida, people are out, they're doing their family stuff, or they're going out and enjoying the nightlife. So a bit tougher to do. I think tomorrow will also be difficult because Inter Miami is supposed to have availability during the day. So might be tough to find some time to record. So I think tonight recording, tomorrow release would probably be best, but I'm still trying to pinpoint that. There'll be a pod no matter what.
That's why you have to subscribe to Miami Total Football, so you can get the notification. Yeah, it's free. So that way, when he does record it and it drops, you get the notification and you can listen to it and hear about the mess that is Inter Miami CF. All right. Follow him on Twitter. You see his Twitter handle right there at Franco Panizo. Franco, as always, great stuff, my brother. I appreciate you big time.
Thanks for having me on, bro. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, my brother. You be good. There you go. Franco Panizo. Give me 30 seconds.
Starting in August, longtime Miami Heat insider Ira Winderman joins the Big O Radio Show. Ira will give insight twice a week on your favorite NBA team. Heat fans get the information you crave from one of the best in the business. From weekly appearances to breaking news, join Ira Winderman exclusively on the Big O Show. Found on most platforms.
All right, we are back. Appreciate all of you keeping it locked here as always. Herman says, guys, I wonder who the hell dislikes Big O Show. He does it every day. Ha ha. Might it be? Oh, that's cruel. I'm not going to even say. Oh, it's just wrong. Hey, listen, man. I mean, everybody's not going to agree with us. You know what I'm saying? Who knows? Maybe it's somebody from the Inter Miami team that hit it. I have no idea. I don't know who did it. It doesn't matter, man. It's all good. It's sports. You know what I mean? So you're going to turn some people off with something that you say. You know what I'm saying? That's just how it is. It might have been a bad word I said and they were bothered by it or something. You know what I mean? And I'm sorry if there's a little cussing every once in a while on the show, but it is what it is. We're not controlled by the FCC, and it's not like we're saying any kind of words that most people don't know or anything like that. So appreciate all of you for keeping it locked as you always do. We thank Franco Panizo as always for chiming in on the show and helping us out here to talk a little bit about the mess that is Inter Miami CF, man. It's painful to watch. It's painful to watch. I mean, 5-0 yesterday. That was, like I said, listen, the fusion were never this bad. It's so discombobulated. And listen, I'm a Jorge Mas fan. Now, I got to do a talk show, and I'm going to call things like I see it, okay? And nobody in that organization can disagree with me. If they do, they're lying to themselves, okay? The team's a mess. There's no chemistry. It's an overpaid team. It's got the highest payroll, and they're the worst team in the damn league. That's embarrassing, dude. You know? And you, does the GM really have all the power? You know, and as much as you like David Beckham, we got to admit David Beckham hasn't really helped out this team. His decisions have been terrible. And like I said before, if you're going to hire a general manager, because we saw this with the Dolphins, right? Stephen Ross fell in love with Ndamukong Suh, so him and Tannenbaum had to have him. And that's what you get for listening to Stephen Ross. Stephen Ross loved Adam Gase, and he loved Joe Philbin. That's what you get for listening to Stephen Ross. Stephen Ross had nothing to do with the hiring of Flo. That was all on Greer. Period. End of story. And look at the results. Hell of an enormous difference from that freaking clown, Philbin, and you watch Flo. I mean, Flo is a man's man, dude. He knows how to coach men. He knows how to get the most out of these guys. Joe Philbin was a weak, flimsy-ass dude that couldn't run anything. How the hell, what vibe gave you from Joe Philbin that he was going to be a leader of men? That's the problem. You can't have the owners making decisions. The owners make decisions, you're screwed. Ex-players that think they're GMs make decisions, you're screwed. Okay? The history of sports, period, is littered with ex-players that are freaking failures as head coaches and front office executives. Filled. It's like 98% failure. Once in a while, you'll get a Jerry West. Once in a while, you'll get an Ozzie Newsome. You know what I mean? Once in a blue moon, you'll get an ex-player that just is actually really great at being an executive. But more often than not, ex-players suck at being an executive. Ex-players suck as being coaches. It's happened a ton also failing. So this, you know, this is nothing new here. And so the question is, if you're going to hire Chris Henderson, well, then let him make all the decisions. But if other people are chiming in, then this is what you get. And Franco just told you that, where he talked to McDonough. At one point, McDonough was looking for young players, and then all of a sudden they went with old veteran players. And, you know, the problem, you know, we've also had this, we have this stupid drug in our heads. Oh, no, we're going to go get Messi, and we're going to go get Cavani, and and you're going to get all those guys in their mid-30s to late-30s. And when they get to this league, which is much more physical, they're not going to dominate it like they thought they would. Happens all the freaking time. There's a bunch of international players that come over here and they think they're going to dominate, and they don't, because it's a physical league. It's a different league. So, you know, it just, you got to get people that know what the hell they're doing to run your franchises and get the hell out of the way. Let the people that know the business run it. The people that don't know the players, then all you're going to do is screw everything up. And that's kind of what's happened behind the scenes. That's what it tells me, is that there's too many chefs in the kitchen, right? That saying, right? Too many chiefs, too little Indians, whichever analogy you want to use, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's your problem right now. Okay? Just terrible, man. It's terrible. It's embarrassing to watch. They'll figure it out, but unfortunately, we got to go through a lot of pain. But eventually, they'll learn, man. Moss wasn't... It's just like Stephen Ross. Super successful in businesses. So is Vinny Viola and Doug Cifu. Super successful in businesses. This is all new to them. They all have failures, right? And then eventually the light comes on and they figure it out and they make the right decision and the team gets on track. That's because eventually they'll figure it out. And eventually Jorge Mas will figure it out. Okay? But this is their second year and it's, man, headed for some ugly, ugly stuff. Speaking of ugly, let's talk about Jerry Jones. Okay? And I say that because, you know, he's old and decrepit. He's about 80 years old. I think he's going to be 79, I think I saw, which I'm having fun with Jerry. But Jerry came out with his diapers and actually made one hell of a declaration finally. And I want to give him credit. Now, listen, Jerry's still a clown. His team is still a clown show. Okay, it's America's clown show. It's not really America's team. It's America's clown show is what they are, right? But he was talking a little bit about the Jimmy Johnson thing. And he said he did a he's a great coach, and I'm proud to have him as a friend and proud to have the times we had. We just had a great experience. Then Jones, choking back the tears, said that it was his own fault that things didn't work out with Johnson. He says, I've never been able to know why I effed it up. I got to give Jerry, look, even though I have, you know, little to no respect for Jerry Jones, because I think he's been the again, talking about owners getting in the way, right? I was just talking about that. And that's been the problem, that he's gotten in the way too much and still gets in the way too much. You know, he needs to shut the hell up and get the hell out of the way and just don't talk, man, and let football people run the team and that's it. But he, you know, he's got to have the spotlight. And he's got to bury it. Listen, as long as he continues to have his daily press conference and at after games and all that, nobody is ever going to have solid footing on that team as a head coach, because everybody's going to know who's in charge all the time, and it's Jerry. So they're going to go to Jerry instead of the coach. It's just, it's a disaster. But anyway, I got to give him at least a little credit, a little love for finally admitting that he was the idiot. Right? I mean, Jimmy built you a monster. You were on a roll. Shut the hell up, dude. Enjoy the ride. But because he's so egotistical and he needs to have, he wants people to give him credit for the championship. You know, like he won it. Like he designed the team. He put it together. When it was all Jimmy, all three championships. Barry Switzer doesn't count. He didn't win no championship. That was Jimmy's assistant coaches and Jimmy's players, man, and Jimmy's culture that was in place. And at that time, there was no cap, so you could take advantage of it. I mean, it was incredibly stupid on his part to ruin something like that. That's like telling the modern-day Vince Lombardi, get the hell out of here. You know, because kind of that's what he was at that moment. I mean, if he produced three titles for you, dude, that's pretty nasty. And you don't even know, could you have won a fourth and a fifth title with that team? Maybe. Maybe. As dominant as that team was, with the kind of talent that that team had and the way they played for Johnson, come on, man. But I got to, at least I give him credit. It took him 400 years to finally admit it, that he was a complete moron. A selfish moron, by the way. That's even worse. Not only are you stupid, but you're selfish and stupid. Egotistical. Maniacal. Just crazy. But Jerry, I give you credit at least. At least you finally admit it. Why? Because you have failed for 20-something years after that. Because now you realize what Jimmy did at that moment, even though it was the non-salary cap era, which it would have been harder during the salary cap era to keep everybody together and keep things going, as all of you know that. But still, at that time, those were the rules, and Jimmy did a great job of putting together a team. A defense, a great quarterback, a great offense, Hall of Fame quarterback, Hall of Fame wide receiver, Hall of Fame running back, Hall of Fame offensive line. I mean, you know, it's pretty impressive what they were able to put together. And you just think about it. If you don't screw it up and you keep Jimmy around, how many more could they have won? And that's what Jerry has to live with. That instead of three, if you shut the hell up and get out of the way, maybe you have four or five. And who cares who did it, dude? We all give Robert Kraft a ton of credit, okay? It's not just, we don't give him credit for going to the Asian Day Spa. We give him a lot of credit for having a coach in place, having a quarterback in place, and winning six titles. He gets it. Don't we give the Rooneys a lot of credit for all their coaches, right? From Cowher to Chuck Knoll to Mike Tomlin, all the championships throughout the three coaches. Don't we give the Rooneys the credit in that one? We do it all the time. All of us have respect for the Rooneys. We don't have to be. I'm not a Steelers fan. I don't give a rat's ass about the Steelers, but I have immense respect for the Rooneys. I consider them royalty in the NFL. when it's all said and done. I think they're great custodians of the league, helping in the proper rules to bring balance, providing their community, their fan base, an incredible team for 50 years now. I mean, don't we always give every owner that is a winning owner, they don't have to run the team for us to give them credit, man. How many times do we credit Mickey Arison, bro? All the freaking time. We love Mickey. Mickey runs his Heat team in an A1 fashion. He freaking hired Pat Riley. And they've done is win and bring us a ton of entertainment. Championships, trips to championships, and conference finals, and an endless amount of playoff trips. The Heat go to the playoff almost as a rite of passage pretty much every year under Mickey Arison. So what's Jerry Jones so worried about? Why is it that he's got to be making all the decisions? It's crazy, but at least I give him credit for the mea culpa and announcing finally that, yeah, you know what? I'm a screw up. Yeah, I'm a screw up. I did it. No doubt. All right. The other thing I wanted to talk about, and, you know, we touched on it yesterday, and if you want, go check out my thoughts on, you know, Saban's comments about the Drew Brees situation and all that kind of stuff, and that, you know, why he left and no Drew Brees, and so without Drew Brees, I'm getting the hell out of here. And, you know, for those of you that saw that, you know what I'm talking about. And so one of the things that I also want to talk about with Saban, and listen, I don't want to harp too much on this and talk about this every day because it's freaking old news, but I do want to bring up something that at least for the moment, I would say that it's a luxury that Nick Saban gets to do what he's doing right now in this discussion. And I say that because Huizenga is no longer with us. And those are the conversations he had with Huizenga. Huizenga can't tell us if it's true or not, because we really don't know. But in the end, one of the things that pisses me off most about all of this is that instead of him making excuses that he didn't get his quarterback, he didn't fight through trying to figure out how to get a quarterback and how to win. And that's kind of the process, isn't it? I mean, Pete Carroll took the job in Seattle without Russell Wilson, and then he went in 8 different directions trying to find a quarterback and finally found one and found himself a Hall of Famer. Sean Payton took the job in Seattle, I mean, in New Orleans, and he didn't have a quarterback. And then he had to sign a guy with a bum shoulder and take a chance on him, and the guy turned out to be a Hall of Famer. You know, the process is something that Bruce Arians, you know, got elevated in Indy because of the cancer to the head coach. And then all of a sudden people got to know him, but then he goes to Arizona. He didn't win anything in Arizona. And then he doesn't give up, and he goes to Tampa, and he has to deal with Jameis Winston throwing 4,000 touchdowns. What would Nick Saban do with Jameis Winston? You know what he would do? Quit. That's all I know about Nick Saban at the pro level. Quit. Did Bruce Arians quit? Did he quit after he didn't get the job in Indy? Did he quit after it didn't work out in Arizona? And then he goes to Tampa, and he didn't quit even after the terror that is, you know, coaching Jameis Winston. Because I can't imagine an offensive-minded coach watching a moron throw 30 interceptions in a season. That's got to be head-scratching, bro. And then they make the move for Brady, and he got his title. So that's the coach I want, the one that's not going to give up. I want Shula. He loses Bob Greasy, and he says, all right, well, I'll work it with Woodstock. And he gets our boys to the Super Bowl. And then he ends up with Marino, and he has a nice run with Marino. Didn't win a championship, but still had a great run with Marino. That's what I want in my coach. Situations aren't always going to be perfect, but part of being a great coach is finding another way to get it done, finding another way to find a player that you need. So Saban wants to go to the NFL, and he also wants to bring the college rules with him. He wants to be able to, you know, sign 5 first rounders every year. Oh, no. And if I'm going to the NFL, you've got to give me a franchise quarterback. There was no guarantee that Drew Brees was going to be the guy. It worked out for New Orleans. God bless him. And God bless Drew Brees. He's a good dude. But I credit more Sean Payton than I credit Drew Brees because of his mental toughness. And is Sean Payton quitting now, or is he trying to coach Drew Brees and Taysom Hill? No, he's trying to coach those two guys and make them quarterbacks. If he can't, he'll go find a quarterback. But all this stuff, because he comes out with this article and talking about why he left Miami. Simple, in fact, you don't have a quarterback. I'm out of here. Come on, dude. Okay, so you don't have a quarterback. It's your decision. You could have said, couldn't he say, I don't want Dante Culpepper? I was the guy that broke the news that year because I was on beat that him and Dante had it out. They denied it, of course, early on and all that, but it all became fact and real after that. But it's your decision, Saban. You were the GM, not Randy Mueller. Randy Mueller was just your puppet. Randy Mueller comes in with all his scouting reports for the draft, and he says, all right, here they are, coach. And you know what Saban does? He then pulls out his own. Boom. So it's like the guy did the work for nothing. You know? So, Saban, you were making the decisions. You chose to have Dante Culpepper as your quarterback. You could have said, no, I don't buy Dante Culpepper. That's not the guy. Let me go find somebody else for now. We'll work on another quarterback. I'll draft one. I'll trade up for one. I'll do so. Why didn't he do that? I'm just tired. Man, instead of making excuses and instead of pointing fingers at other people, look at yourself in the mirror, okay? You failed. You're a failure in the NFL, period. You stuck your tail between your legs and you left after 2 years. That means you punked out in my eyes. That's all that means. Doesn't mean anything else. It's pretty simple. You made the decisions. Don't tell me that you didn't get Drew Brees because then you signed Dante Culpepper. So if you were so convinced that Dante Culpepper wasn't the guy, why'd you sign him? Right? You obviously felt you could win with him, or you're not going to sign him. That's why I guess you played with Gus Frat, because you thought you could win with him. And you ended up winning 9 games with Gus Frat, which is actually a pretty damn good accomplishment. But don't give me this shit that, oh, I left because I didn't get Drew Brees. Dude, you signed Culpepper. That's your fault. You should have gone after somebody else. Shouldn't have traded a second rounder. Just ridiculous, bro. I just love these kind of guys that just want to make excuses and blame everybody else for their failures. You were in charge, bro. Everybody knows. You didn't take the job without being fully in charge. That's the only way you would have taken an NFL job. Huizenga gave you all the clout you needed. Nobody made decisions for you, dude. They got you a bubble. You decided for that bubble to explode by quitting after the second year and racing off to college, because that's how your materialistic attitude and everything works. It works with kids because you can threaten them. You couldn't threaten Dante Culpepper because he would beat your ass. Okay? You're not going to threaten Zach Thomas. Zach Thomas is going to mother F you. Okay? Those are the things that happen behind the scenes. Because these players know what the hell they're doing. You obviously were not mentally suited for the NFL because you folded after 2 years. Fold after adversity. But with kids, you don't have adversity. You can dominate them. You can ridicule them. You can insult them, and then you can get rid of their asses and their scholarships and go get a new one. That doesn't happen in the NFL. You signed a contract. Now you got to coach them. And now you got to work through the character. You just didn't have the patience and you didn't have the balls to stay in the game. You weren't suited for the NFL. tough guys are the ones suited for the NFL, like Bruce Arians. He fights cancer and he fights Winston. Okay? That's strong right there. Remember to follow us here on Twitter at Big O Show, on email, BigORadioShow@yahoo.com. Don't forget to hit the hell out of that like button. Please smash that like button. Very important to smash that like button, whether you're listening to the podcast, watching it on YouTube. Please smash the like button and share the link, whether it's the podcast, whether it's YouTube, send it to a friend. Invite them to join our family. And remember, of course, another way to support us is on Cash App and Venmo. Cash App or Venmo, Cash Big O Show. That's Cash Big O Show. And Dougie Fresh sends one in on the Super Chat. He says, oh, Saban's failure as an NFL head coach is inability to work with grown men. Saban is more bully than genius. Right. Right. And that works with kids. You can be a bully with kids. Big O, I remember when Nick Saban kept saying, I'm not going anywhere. Remember? I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. Not going to be the Alabama coach. Not going to be the Alabama coach. I think we have that one here of Saban saying that he's not going to be the Alabama coach. I'm pretty sure. Got to look it up here, but I can bring you guys back to what's that called? Bring you back to the memories of Nick Saban saying, I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. Remember that. Let's see where we at. Okay, there we go.
I know you said Saturday after the game that the plan was to play two at some point in the first half.
This
is that still the same plan this week?
This is not the one. Sorry. I will try to find it while we're talking and having some fun here with it. But I do have – I know I have it. I have Saban talking about not being the Alabama coach. It's a classic. It's one that that will live forever, and we will always have it here with us, locked and loaded, so we can always share it with you guys. I know I have it somewhere around here, man. I just got to find it. It's a little bit of a mission when you've got to let's see. Here we go. I think I got it now. Let's see. We have a lot of Saban sound bites.
There's no room for the poor me's.
No, the poor me's. No room for it, huh?
This is not a dangerous game.
No, it's not? Okay.
You know, there's a salary cap on players, but there's really not a salary cap on coaches.
Ah, okay. All right. Okay. I know I have it here somewhere, but I'll find it for you guys somehow. But yes, I still have it. That's a Dave Hyde. That's a Dave Hyde question, by the way. For those of you that don't know, you got to give Dave Hyde the credit. He's the one that asked the question and was pushing him, and eventually he gave in and snapped.
Can we earn it to get there?
No.
That's the question. That's the things we need to focus on. That's what we need to do.
Sure. Okay.
And that's some chicken scratch.
Yes, it is. Yes. So there you go. I'll try to find it if I have it somewhere. I don't know what I have it labeled. I tried to see if it's not going to be the Alabama coach. So I started with not, but I have not found that one right there. So I am sorry about that. But anyway, I'm not going to keep screwing around with this, but I will try to find it for you guys maybe down the line. Bro, I pop into the show eight to minutes at a time, and every time I learn something. Coño, tremendo show. Oh, well, thank you, DJ Gallagher. Very nice. That is too kind of you, sir. Alex Diaz, by the way, I saw where you said earlier, and I don't know if you saw my response, that you're getting tired of all these Deshaun Watson rumors, and I told you don't get into crypto. Alex, you couldn't deal with the hell of crypto every day. Which, by the way, crypto's bounced back a little bit, which is nice. Definitely nice. Nick made Manuel Wright cry. Yes, he did. Yeah, the classic Saban line is the one I'm not going to be. Yes, I know. I have it. I know that I do have it, but I don't know where the hell it is. So I've got to find it now. But I will. Eventually, I'll get it. All right. Let's do this. Let's take a really quick break here. Give me 1 minute, and we'll be right back to start off hour number three.